Hey there, and welcome to the Smart and Simple Matters Show with your host, Joel Zeslavsky. Does anyone else feel like skipping rocks on the water and letting the day wash over them like a cool breeze? Okay, maybe it's just me. This is episode number 15. Well, hey there, everybody. Welcome to another smoking episode of the Smart and Simple Matters Show. The sparks for your mental fire will be courtesy of Dan and Vanessa Hayes today as they join me from their home in San Antonio, Texas. This is the first episode of the show where I have the pleasure of interviewing not just one person, but two people at the same time. I think it's probably too soon to call this cool couple a dynamic duo, but I'm going to do it myself. I'll let everybody else be the judge of that after they listen. Let's start with an intro of Dan, and then I'll let you all know a bit about Vanessa. Dan provides business development services to business owners and leaders in niche markets by helping them build an integrated approach to enhancing their company's web presence, customer and community engagement, content development, search engine optimization, media platforms, and branded videos. Basically, my interpretation of that is he rocks at a lot of stuff. And Vanessa is a professional organizer and the chief simplicity officer of Get Simplified. She provides hands-on professional organizing services for residential and business clients and is also available for virtual consulting if that's your thing. Together, they co-host Simple Life Together, a podcast dedicated to leading a simple life in the modern world. Currently, the show is listed in the new and notable section of four categories in iTunes, and lately has been consistently listed in the top 200 podcasts in iTunes. You can find out more about them and what they do at simplelifetogether.com. I would like to extend an incredibly warm welcome to you two, Dan and Vanessa. Glad to have you on today.
Oh, geez, thank you. That was really nice. Thank you.
It's great to be here, Joel. I'll tell you what, we have followed your work since you started, and it's been a great inspiration for us, and we love what you do. So, I mean, we're thrilled to be here today.
Yes, thank you.
We'll all be rosy-cheeked by the end of the show. I might be blushing here. You could probably tell me if I am. I want to give everybody a little bit of a heads up of some of the things that we'll be getting into today. We're going to be talking about some of your background, maybe even going back to the childhood days and some of the sparks that created where you are now in life. Your groovy edit and forget it challenge, which I'm really excited to talk about with you. A whole host of things related to organizing, but not the typical kind of stuff that is discussed frequently, whether it's on the internet or in person. I'm going to enjoy this one. Hopefully everybody else will too. It's going to be my first How Crazy Is Joel segment. And although people might be sick of hearing me write about and talk about spreadsheets, maybe we'll go into a question about one of them as well. How's that sound to you two?
Sounds good.
Sounds fantastic. Let's do it.
Cool. All right. First up, I'm going to give you both a crack at this one, since I know that I'm going to get different answers and perhaps some cool contrast between your two answers. Can you each tell me one major event growing up or some kind of prominent family philosophy that set you on your path to where you are today as individuals?
Well, I could probably hit that first. As far as individuals, as far as my profession, or just how I am today? I mean,
you can take that any way you like,
okay.
Vanessa.
Okay. Well, I think a couple of things. I grew up in a military family, and part of that stereotype of a military family is that you move around a lot, which we did, and because of moving around a lot, we had to pick up and go, and we had to. And part of pick up and go was not just the moving part, but you had to leave friends that you met behind. And so what happened there was that really internalized this, the value of family, and that, family, your friends come and go, family is forever. And so that is something that has stuck with me my entire life. And so that's a very important part of my life, is just spending time with family and doing really meaningful things with them and spending time with them. So that's part of what, as far as my growing up, that had a big impact on me personally. Now, as far as like work and stuff too, because a lot of folks are always interested in professional organizers, and they're like, have you always been organized? Have you always been just this super clean freak? And I would tell you, no. And my mother would say no. I was the messiest of four kids growing up, believe it or not. But what happened was, as I was on my own, I realized that that things were so chaotic in my mind. You know, when you step out of the house, you're responsible for so many things. You know, going to school, trying to make a living or figure out what that is, trying to balance a checkbook, and all that stuff was so crazy to me that I figured out early on that when my physical environment was clear, I was able to concentrate better. And so I started to kind of adopt this idea of having an organized space and organized life. But when I look back, I realized that a lot of what I learned was from my mom and my parents, but specifically my mom. She always had a very organized home. She was always a planner when it came to family stuff too, and was very big about having responsibilities. Everybody had a responsibility in the home. And so yeah, I guess, you know, growing up, I had influence from both my mother and my father for the profession that I'm in today, and also some of the things that I value and try to share with my family as a wife and as a mother. Is that about what you're looking for?
Wow, that's awesome.
That is.
I have to follow that?
You do, Dan, I'm sorry to say. You can right. punt on this one if you want, but I think people are going to be interested in hearing from you too.
No, I'm good. Yeah, I'm from a large family, seven kids in the family, and you know, anytime you have a mom and a dad and seven kids in the family, things have the potential to be pretty darn chaotic. And I'm really impressed. We only have two kids. I'm really impressed with my parents' ability to get us all through that and all of us be sane. But one of the things that goes along with that, having that many folks in your family, is that you tend to like order. And because it can be a bit like, you know, the old saying, herding cats, let's go grab something to eat. Well, what do you want? Well, what do you want? Well, what do you want? How about we do this? How about we do that? You know, and so it's like, okay, somebody make a decision and let's go. And so I think I do gravitate towards order because of that. But I also know that because of the example that my parents and my brothers and sisters set, that no matter how many different opinions you have or, you know, goals, they can all be unified. And you can, you know, in the military, we used to say, you know, get everything in formation and get it going in the same direction. And I think my family did that exceptionally well. And one other thing with that is you share everything when there's that many people in the family. It's kind of communal property in a lot of cases. And so one thing I did cherish was we all had kind of a small area that we were able to keep our stuff. And I kept that area spotless. I mean, everything was perfectly organized, and I maintain that for the most part to this day. Mm-hmm. I do like that part of order. I know where something goes. It's there when I need it, and so I think that really shaped my life as in what I do today with Vanessa and talking about it on Simple Life Together.
Yeah. It's interesting to hear you frame it that way. A lot of people talk about either organized or clutter and two ends of the spectrum or on different levels of equilibrium. To hear you talk about order, and on the opposite end, I think of as chaos,
right.
Which chaos is this big, scary thing. You fall off a cliff into a void of chaos, into the dark shadows. And to hear you talk about order in that way, maybe you don't have the mental images that I do. Who knows where those came from? but that's a cool way to look at it, and I guess I have a similar take on that too. I know you too. Maybe we might even hit into it too. Vanessa, you were talking about all the times that you moved. Stats are impressive. Which one of you has moved 27 times in your life? The other one has moved 19. Is that correct?
Right. That's me. Yeah, I moved. And I count even when I was like in college, moving from apartment to apartment or things like that. But all that stuff is a major event. And yes, I've moved 27 times in 38 years. And yes, that is my age. I am not shy about it. But yes, I moved quite a bit when I was a child. And then, of course, as an adult, because I also obviously was in the military too. So a lot of moving.
Wow. Well, perhaps all that moving was some of the inspiration for the first thing that we're going to be chatting about. And one of the main reasons, well, I guess there aren't main reasons. There are lots of reasons I'm excited to have you on the show today. You two recently created what I think is a pretty nifty concept. And for those of you who listen to your podcast, they're already familiar with it. But for those who aren't, it's called Edit and Forget It, 2013 Fewer Things in 2013. Mm-hmm. I'll let you two do justice, of course, by describing what it is, what the catalysts were for creating it. But when I viewed the show notes on your podcast, introducing everybody to Edit and Forget It, I'm going to link to it in the show notes. I saw a stat that can't be true, and we've already talked about stats a little bit here. It said that the average American home has around 300,000 things in it. And I thought to myself, how can that be? And is that the reason why having 2013 fewer things in the year 2013 is doable?
Yeah. I'm gonna let Dan handle this. This is Dan's brainchild, this whole idea, this I Don't Forget It challenge. But yeah.
You know, we thought the same thing, mm-hmm. and still do, about that 300,000 number. And I mean, it's an incredible number, and we've heard it briefed between the two of us at least five different times by different colleagues, and they've been sourcing up a local periodical here in town. And we've actually reached out to the person that has supposedly had put that number out there to get more background on it, because
it's startling.
It's amazing. It's an amazing number. So what we concluded really was, and we're very careful about this on the, when we talk about it on the show, is that that has got to include every single tiny little thing in a home. Like, mm-hmm. so say for instance, you have a box of Q-tips. You don't count that as one box. You count that as the 250 Q-tips, or a jar of nails or what have you. I mean, I know I have, I'm a do-it-yourselfer guy. I got boxes of nails. They come out 1,000 to a box. So when you look at it that way,
it's
you know,
plausible.
A one ream of paper is 500 things. Mm-hmm. And so it has to include that number. I don't think it's a fact. And I've, like I said, done a lot of research on it. And one of the most pervasive studies that, I don't know if you've heard of this, UCLA's Center for Everyday Life of Families did a study called Life at Home in the 21st Century. 32 families opened their doors. Joel, you should take a look at that one. It will blow you away.
It's crazy.
So what they did was they sent a team of archaeologists, anthropologists, and other social scientists to do a no-kidding systematic study of 32 dual-income middle-class families in the Los Angeles area. 2 to 3 kids, you know, not the people that you see on Hoarders, just 32 suburban families. And I have a couple of stats that I want to cover on this. They're just amazing. When they visited, they called them Family 27, they found 2,260 visible possessions in the first rooms recorded. And that didn't include, and I'm quoting, that it says that didn't include untold numbers of items tucked into dresser drawers, boxes and cabinets, or items positioned behind other items. Then family number one, they looked at one display shelf in her room, and on one shelf, they found 165 Beanie Babies, 36 human or animal figurines, 22 Barbie dolls, 20 other types of dolls, 3 specifically porcelain dolls, 1 troll, and a miniature castle. So if there's a troll, there was probably a bridge in there too. But and this will be the last one that I, the stat from this that I throw out, unless you want more. But they evaluated the fronts of refrigerators through these 32 homes, and the average of all the homes had 52 objects stuck onto the refrigerator.
Mm-hmm. Does that count the magnets?
That counts the magnets, because that was some of the decorative stuff.
Okay.
But the worst one had 166 different objects. And what they're finding out is these are like shrines to people's daily existence. That, you know, it covers, they broke it down into personal information, practical information like calendars and so forth, and pretty information, or pretty
like
stuff like the magnets. You know, but when you look at that, that 300,000 doesn't seem so unrealistic. And one of the statistics that the National Association for Professional Organizers puts out is a simple 4-drawer filing cabinet holds 18,000 different files, right? 80% of which, they quote, will never be looked at again.
Right.
So when you consider wrap all that stuff in, you know, we're thinking, well, maybe that 300,000 isn't that far off. But
how many photos you have, how many Legos you have, how many Polly Pockets, how many just different types of toys and just paper and all that. It may not be too unreasonable.
Yeah.
But it's still startling.
Remember those games where, guess the number of M&Ms in the jar? Mm-hmm. I was always terrible at that. I was always low. So, you know, if the 300,000 is 100% accurate, we can't back that up. And I don't think anybody's actually ever counted. But we quote that kind of as a statistic that has been put out there, if nothing else, but for some initial shock value to get attention.
Mm. Yeah, I know, and it's not about the stats for you. I know, right. It's about going deeper and being introspective and questioning, what's my relationship with stuff? Completely independent of any numbers here and the fact that you want to encourage people to reduce their numbers of possessions, mm-hmm. What does it mean to you to have people participate in this challenge?
The 2013 things, we just made that because of the, we brought it out the first of the year. That was the number. And it's like, well, that's a number that's realistic, but it's also going to stretch you a little bit, mm-hmm. right, Vanessa?
Right. We just had an interview with Joshua Becker, and he was saying that that's a really good number. I mean, he's becoming minimalist, but he was saying that, you know, that's one that's going to test you. That's a good number. It's going to, you know, you have a year to do it. It is the challenge. But as far as what it means to us, it's just telling me that, and I've seen this with my clients, is that there is a need to simplify. There is a need to just get detached from all that physical clutter that's just overwhelming you, and it's really controlling you. And so to me, it's amazing that these folks are, one, listening to us, and they're hearing the message, but two, that they're like, I really want to do this. And then the feedback we get is great too, saying, yeah, it felt awesome, you know. And I even put a question out there, hey, has anybody had any trouble getting rid of stuff? And you know, the thing is, I kind of had a hard time getting rid of my Doctor Who Entertainment Weekly magazine.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
a little funny.
This one thing. So, you know, he was just kind of making a funny, but I guess it just, to me, means that there really is a need out there to simplify. And it's really neat that there's folks that are willing to step on board and challenge themselves with it.
And the one thing that we stress is it's not about the number. If you don't get 2013, no big deal. But we want you to really evaluate, just like you said, your relationship with things that you own. And I think that to a person, they're going to find out that either they bought into the consumer society that we're subjected to as we go through our day-to-day lives and are hit with 5,000 different ads in a day on average.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to realize that, wow, I don't need this to be happy. This will never make me happy.
Right.
So we ask the question all the time, would twice as much stuff make you happy? Would three times as much stuff make you happy? Well, how about half? Well, how about a quarter? It's really that relationship, and that's what's important.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Joel, as far as, you know, it really isn't about the numbers there. And at 2013, it's really about going through the process and being a little bit more mindful of what you allow into your home and, you know, the decisions that you make as far as, you know, purchasing and spending money and or spending your time doing things that you really don't want to do. It stretches to a lot of different levels.
Well, I know that you take it even beyond the home. I mean, this is beyond the scope of the Edit and Forget It challenge. Dan, you can certainly feel this one too, but between the three of us, only Vanessa is a certified professional organizer. This gets into something that I'm always very curious about. And as much as I love a Spartan, clean, physical environment, and that puts my brain in a good place, I'm very cognizant of my digital landscape and what that looks like too. So Vanessa, I'm really curious to hear your thoughts about the differences in tackling digital organizing and removing digital stuff versus physical organizing and physical stuff. Like, for example, if I came to you with a computer desktop and I had more icons and shortcuts than you could shake a stick at, how would your approach to helping me differ than if I came at you with a physical office of, say, post-it notes on a computer monitor, the walls, the desks,
right,
maybe even one of my dogs if I ran out of surface area?
Well, actually, I love the question. And actually, I tackle it a lot the same. There's a few things I might do a little bit differently, but I do tackle it the same. And the first thing I do is I say, okay, well, let's get rid of all the stuff that you absolutely know that you don't need. And actually, even before I do that, I always start my questioning with, whether it's physical or digital clutter or whatever the case may be, what is causing you the most pain? What is driving you the craziest? Is it you can't find stuff on that desktop because you have too many of those shortcuts and those icons up there? Okay, do you necessarily need to have them there? Okay. Or are you just overwhelmed by your inbox? Is this just too many emails? I mean, what is causing you the most pain? Or are you having a hard time finding the documents that you have saved on computer, but you just haven't organized them right? And so you're just getting lost and you just don't know where to start to get things kind of orderly. Well, I just start with the pain factor. What's causing you the most pain? And that's what we usually tackle first. And so once I get an idea of that, then what I do is just kind of like I do with physical organizing too is, okay, let's start trashing the things that you know you don't need. What do you not need anymore? Let's get rid of that. Let's get rid of that extra stuff that you know you don't need. That's the easy thing. And then what I do is I start to do a general sort of items. So whether it's either inbox or just documents, I try to categorize things into general, you know, areas, you know, whether it be your household stuff, your bills, maybe it's medical information, tax information, maybe it's business information, school stuff, whatever the case may be. We just do a general sort first. And that alone really kind of helps people kind of clear their mind and get things kind of sorted. And then I go on to the next step, and that's what I call the fine tuning. And that's where we can do subcategories on each one of those items. Your taxes, you can divide those up into tax years and even further subdivide it, if that's your thing, if that's what you need. Dan, I think, has a little bit of a different approach to digital organizing. But you know what's funny about this, about, you know, when you do the digital stuff, especially with my clients, I find that I have to deal with the physical clutter first before they can even attempt to tackle the digital clutter. It's like they're like, I have all this paper. I need to figure that out, get rid of that stuff and get that organized first before we can even tackle the digital stuff. It's like taking it to the next level for my clients, because I can't even talk to them about scanning and doing stuff until they know that what they have, you know, as far as their hard copies of stuff is absolutely what they need. Then we can move on to the next step. And then talking about that next step as far as digitizing things, and once we get things organized, whether it's their email or their files, what I talk to them about is like, okay, that's great. We just organize all this stuff, but how are we going to keep you from preventing this digital pileup again? It's all about the maintenance and what system are we going to put in place? And I find that that without getting too much specifics is that I have to find systems that follow their natural tendencies to do stuff, whether they naturally check their email throughout the day or just one time a day, or how do they naturally bring in paper into their home, and then how, you know, what is more natural for them to, as far as scanning that stuff and getting it digitized. I have to look at their natural tendencies first and then figure out a system that's going to be easy and convenient for them. It has to be easy, because if it's not easy, they're not going to do it.
So let me ask you about that, sure. Though, because that's... Mm-hmm. I think that's something that we need to drill just a little bit further down into.
Sure.
You're talking about needs and tendencies. Mm-hmm. These are unique to everybody.
Yes.
Is it your role or your goal when you go into someone's house or someone's business to try to change their mindset about what's appropriate and to help them not defeat themselves, to give them not just a system, but to give them a mindset? An internal mindset, whether it's emotional or mental, to deal with distinguishing between needs and wants and desires or what their tendencies could actually be?
You know, that's a great question. What I do is I do what I call as a needs assessment with my clients. I spend anywhere from an hour and an hour and a half talking to them about trying to define what their needs. Sometimes, and I'm always listening to the client. I mean, you're in listen mode pretty much the whole time. And then you start to analyze. You start to hear what they're saying and you can pick up on the pain factor. and then looking around and hearing how they do things, you can pick up patterns on how they actually do certain things. And then from there, I'm able to kind of differentiate or at least kind of, I'm not trying to push them to any one way of doing things, because you're just going to get resistance. That's all you're going to get. You have to figure out what their needs are. And what I do a lot of times is I listen to them and they can say this living room is a mess. I really want it to be family friendly, or this is driving me crazy. But the reality is, as I dig deeper and start talking to them more, I find out that really it's probably something else altogether. And I talk them through that, but I try to have them come to that conclusion again, because they need to have ownership of what's really causing them the pain. It can't be me telling you. It's like a kid, you know, you try to tell them that this is how you need to do it because I said so. No, you kind of try to work them to their own conclusion on where they need the most help. And I find that's usually the most effective. Now, as far as guiding them to certain systems, sometimes I do. I will recommend it based on what I've kind of learned from them as far as through the interview process and then even working through with them as we organize. Every session, I learn a little bit more. Every discussion we have, learn a little bit more about them, and I can really kind of pinpoint certain systems that will work better for them. Some people more visual, some people more auditory, you know, different types of learners out there that have different systems for them. So I don't know if I answered that quite clearly or not, but the bottom line is I don't ever try to drive them to a one way. I try to have them express to me what their needs are. We discuss that, and then I try to just evaluate through interviews and observation what would be the best system for them.
Yeah, you answered it clearly to me. You answered it more clearly than I asked the question. A lot of times I ask questions that people have a difficult time unpacking because there's about five aspects of it. I really got to work on that, don't I?
Oh, it's all good.
Well, Dan, we don't necessarily need to alternate and turn it back to you, but of course I'm interested in all your views on everything. We could literally talk for hours because what we've talked about so far is fascinating. And I don't want to focus exclusively on simplifying and organizing. We're all much more than that, and we all represent more than that. But I promised everybody that we'd get into, I don't think this will be a reoccurring segment, maybe it will, the how crazy is Joel part of our chat here.
Okay.
And this goes down a similar path that we've been going down right now. And I could find at least 100 ways that I or other people think that I'm a bit wackadoodle, shall we say? But I'm going to ask for your insight on one of them today. Feel free to bring up your own later, if you like, of course. Anyway, I wrote an article on Value Simple last year called How Simple Heroes Ditch Clutter and Master Chaos. And I had a serious axe to grind at that point in time. The premise is that clutter is just a crude manifestation of a much greater force, chaos, which, Dan, we were just talking about a moment ago,
right?
That distinguishing line between order and chaos. Okay. Do you believe that, like I do, that clutter is just a form of chaos and that we need to focus on rooting out the source of chaos in our lives instead of just the clutter that it generates?
Yeah, I think I don't know if one necessarily derives from the other, but without a doubt, I know that both exist. All right. So, and I think everybody's level of tolerance is different on that. And, you know, so how would I deal with that personally? You know, I, like I said, I'm a military guy or was for, you know, almost three decades. And I would immediately say, okay, they're both targets that I need to take care of. All right. In this situation, I'd immediately go through like a decision-making process. We called it the OODA loop, the observe, orient, decide, and act loop. And then there's a saying when we're out on the firing range that you shoot the 50-meter targets before you shoot the 300-meter targets, right? And in life, that's easy with paper, but in life, it may be a chaotic thing or a clutter thing that is an individual threat to your productivity at the time. So you have to differentiate on those. And I think that as long as that you can be deliberate in your process to have some sort of control. If your goal is to have a simpler life, I don't think that means a carefree life at all. I think it does mean controlling your environment, being deliberate about what you let into it. And that, and the what you let into it includes not just things, not just possessions, but relationships, things that you sign up for. You know, are all four of your kids all playing soccer and they're all at different parts of the city at the same night for practices? Mm-hmm. Those are all things that, while they may clutter your schedule, they cause chaos in your life. So maybe it's a chicken and the egg type of thing, mm-hmm. where you can, one feeds off of the other. So I think that you have to really introspectively look at how they affect your life and what your end state is, what your goal is in the end. But I do believe they're mutually supporting.
So how do you do that? How do you take that internal journey, especially for somebody who's clearly hung up on terminology like I am? You know, how do you reframe an issue of simplifying and organizing, mm-hmm. so that somebody like me, when I hear clutter, I just kind of tune it out and I think that's not what it's about. It's about chaos and it's about something deeper. It's about something more nefarious, if you will, that is more difficult to conceptualize and grasp. People have this emotional, Vanessa, you were talking about resistance. Mm-hmm. How do you move people past the resistance of terminology or a certain word to get them to go forward on what they've declared to you they want, which is simplifying and organizing?
Well, you know, it's interesting because a lot of times I say purging a lot, like it's not this offensive word or anything, but that can be offensive to some people. Clutter, when you call their stuff clutter, that can be offensive. So a lot of times, depending on my comfort level with a client, because you can, you know, every client is different and you build this different comfort level, I'm very cautious of how I approach terms, you know. You know, it is something deeper. That clutter is caused by something a little bit deeper. And whether there be some kind of chaos in our life or something else, a lot of times what I try to do, and not that I'm really trying to, I guess I just have this way of communicating with my clients and trying to get out of them, why do you think you have all this stuff? You must be filling some void in your life, you know. And I don't say that to them. They come to that own, their own conclusion. I'm very careful about that. But I'll say, okay, so why do you feel the need to have every new Coach purse or pair of shoes that comes out? You know, yet you're struggling to live paycheck to paycheck. There's something else there. And eventually, depending on that comfort level and that trust that I build with them, it'll usually come out that, you know what, I'm filling a void in my life. You know, that is what gives me temporary satisfaction at this point in my life. I don't have a really close relationship with my spouse or my kids. I can't connect with them right now or whatnot. And I know I'm probably going off on a little bit of a tangent here and maybe not even quite answering your question, but
you're talking to the king of tangents, by the way, so go right ahead.
Well, thank goodness. But I think you're right. You know, clutter is not just that physical object. It is something deeper than that. You know, whether you have the thrill of the hunt and getting the best deal on things. And so you love that you just saved $10 on this item, so you absolutely have to have it. No, you don't. What is that? Can you, you know, I'm just getting all really animated and passionate over here. Dan's looking at me, but but it's really, it is something deeper. There's something that is causing that, you know.
And you know, I think I would ask one thing too is, a lot of the things that we deal with in simplifying and Vanessa and organizing, or when we're talking about digital files, is did anybody ever sit you down and show you how to do that or teach you the good way? No, you just kind of go with it. You learn it. You know, for digital files, for those of us who, you know, in my generation, computers were new, and especially getting a home computer, and that was all new. So I think there was maybe a natural tendency to think, well, let me use the same files that I use in my physical filing cabinet, and I'll name them the same thing. And you know, there really is something different. There's, and especially with newer technology, I would say that if you just follow these, you just take the path of least resistance on a lot of things because they weren't taught, and you just figure it out as a human as you go, it can cause the chaos. It may be not be this nefarious outside force like you're talking about, that, but you actually kind of cause your situation yourself. And not tapping into new ways of doing things, like where I differ from Vanessa on my personal style when I deal with my clients on digital files, is I rely solely on search and most programs. I have few folders in, or labels, they're called in Gmail. I have a few labels in there, but I rely on the search function. That's what Google does best. Same with Evernote. When I first got it, I naturally went through and made all of these different folders, and then I got into massive amounts of tags, and I caused my own confusion and chaos. Mm-hmm. So if I went to tag something and say it was camping, but I already used camping gear, I just caused myself two tags when I only needed one. And now I use keyword-rich titles in my notes. So just a for instance, to save myself some of that chaos, I was looking for my son's shot records for his Boy Scout physical this year. And so when I titled that, I don't do like a natural title that you would read the title of a book. I titled it My Son's Name, Shots, Immunizations, Inoculations. And so no matter what search term I use in the future, it's going to pop up. So I use the inherent power of so many of these tools to kind of cut the chaos out for me, because I think I have a natural tendency to cause over order, in my opinion, but that causes confusion.
You'd make a really good curator, Dan.
Thank you.
Maybe you already are. Maybe we'll have to explore some other ways.
I'm sure we'll find out.
Yeah, we will.
I'm learning from him, that's for sure.
Well, this message that you're telling everybody on Smart and Simple Matters today, for one, personally, I love it, and it speaks to me. Is the reason why you created a podcast in the first place so that you could reach more people with this message and with this collective mission that it seems like you two, although you might take different stances, it seems like there's a shared philosophy in terms of what the end goal is. Is that the reason why you created the podcast?
I personally am. That's the reason why the driving force for me as far as the podcast. Now, here's what's interesting about the podcast. Of course, Dan's the brainchild behind it. And he comes up with these great ideas or these ideas, and I'm either yay or nay, you know. But I was totally on board with it. And the reason why I was on board with the podcast is because my message was going only so far as whoever was interested in my blog, which I do, and I like my blog. I've got a great, you know, a good following there. But there's millions of blogs out there, so it's really hard to reach, you know, a big group of people, you know. And then as far as my one-on-one conversations, as far as my message goes, it went as far as my client, and that was it. But I knew that there was a need because I could see the look in their eyes the second I started talking about how Dan and I were going on this, that we're on this journey to a simpler life. Their eyes just totally lit up. Their brows went up and they're like, what do you mean? You're trying to downsize? You know, what do you mean? You guys work from home. You're not relying on these huge, you know, these corporate, you know, jobs or whatever. I was like, nope. And we are happier than we've ever been. And so I knew that there was a need and there was an interest. And so when Dan said, let's start talking about it, well, you know, I got the gift of gab. And so I was like, awesome, let's do it. So that was very motivating for me, yes, to try to reach a bigger audience. And the podcast, it seems like it's doing that.
Yeah. You know, like Vanessa said, we're on this, and we do call it a journey to simplify our lives. It's not. We haven't reached it, and we are on it, and that's fine. But we start everything with a military planning term called the desired end state. What do we want it to look like? And you know, there's lots of productivity folks out there that says, well, you know, what is the begin with the end in mind? All sorts of different things. But the message is the same. It's tough to find out. It's tough to figure out how you want to get there unless you know where you're going.
Right.
But like Vanessa said, when we said we wanted to do this, not many people really get us. And we wanted to be part of a community that gets it. We can bounce ideas off of. And when we really didn't find one, we decided to start one of our own. You know, no guts, no glory. Let's do it. Let's be the catalyst for it. We've individually spent lots of times reading blogs like yours and listening to your podcast and tons others out there, talking to all the minimalist folks up at the World Domination Summit. We go to that every summer and, you know, talking to them and interacting with them. And when we didn't find this community, we decided to just let's start one ourselves. And the great thing about podcasting is you don't have to be the absolute expert. It's more about sharing your experiences. And so far, we have been amazed at the results, and a lot of people have reached out to us, and we're learning from their experiences, mm-hmm. probably more than they learned from us. And we have an absolute blast doing it, and we were blown away with the whole edit and forget it thing, how many people signed up for that initially and continue to sign up. And so I guess there's a lot of people out there in this big global community that are like us and want to be part of the journey, but they're not immediately in our neighborhood or maybe in our family, a circle of family and friends. Mm-hmm. So, but we don't have to just rely on that. We can reach out. So that's a big reason why we started, I think.
Right.
That's awesome. And it's good to hear, Dan, that sometimes you're the ideas guy and then Vanessa's the director of common sense. And you pitch it to her and she says, okay, sure. Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. The director of common sense, by the way, that's copyright Bill Simmons, also known as the sports guy for Grandland.com. I'm a huge fan of his. I've been reading his work for a decade, and he's big on talking about in sports and how a sports team should have a director of common sense or a sports league where he would fill that role. He would serve for all the ideas that somebody threw out there, run it by the director of common sense first, and then move forward if the director says it's okay.
I love
good
it.
Advice. Maybe that's an unfair impression to make between the two of you.
No, we both do pretty good. We do pretty good together.
Yeah, we balance each other out pretty good.
And I like that too about moving from a place where nobody seems to get it or nobody seems to get you, and this internal fire that you have for simplifying, for becoming a minimalist, and the connotations that are associated with that term. There's still a lot of misperceptions about it, or organizing and what that brings to people's minds, and moving into a community of people who do get it or who want to get it. And it does seem like that's expanding, and that's really exciting to me too.
Yeah.
I did want to talk about some things that have, well, at least seemingly on the surface, not much to deal with one of the major themes, or two of the major themes that we're talking about here, simplifying and organizing. Vanessa, I noticed, and Dan, I was checking it out too on your website for the podcast. I noticed two charities, Kiva and Charity Water. And some of the profits that you make from your business or businesses go to one of those two organizations. Can you tell us why specifically are Kiva and Charity Water so near and dear to you?
Well, you want to take Charity Water?
Yeah,
and I'll take Kiva?
Yeah, I'll talk about Charity Water. Yeah, because Kiva is, Dan introduced us, or to me, to Kiva, but we were both exposed to Charity Water at the World Domination Summit last summer in Portland. And, oh my gosh, I forgot his name. Harrison. Scott Harrison, I believe is his name. He's the CEO of Charity Water. He gave this just amazing presentation about what his charity is about. And basically, in the bottom line, is that he helps build wells for different villages and communities that need fresh water. And basically, he does it with his donations. And the donations are 100% of the donations go to building those wells. It's amazing, his business model, how he made that work. And I won't go into a huge amount of detail. You can just go to charitywater.com, I think, to find out more information. Charitywater.org. Sorry about that. But here's what's interesting about that, Joel, is that before we even went to, we were on our way to that conference, and Dan and I were having this conversation. It's just crazy what happened. Dan and I were having this conversation about, he dropped the bomb on me about, I want to live a simpler life. Like, I've always wanted that, but he really said, yeah, we're going to be giving up the dream home now. We're going to move down, you know, and he wasn't forceful like that, but he was just presenting this idea to me. It was like, he's been planting the seed, but it finally had sprouted in my head. And so I was like, you know what? I'm on board with you. At the same time, we're talking about, you know what? I also want to be, I want to give. I want to give more because I honestly, and just being candid here, is that I've always liked the idea of volunteering, but I've never really done it that much. I've done it occasionally, but I've never been real deliberate about it. And I felt like it was time because I get so much satisfaction when I help my clients. But yeah, I'm getting paid in return for the most part for that. I wanted to just give. And to me, when I listened to, you know, the CEO of Charity Water talk, I mean, I was in tears in the audience. And I was like, I am doing that. I am going to, and he has this program too, where you can give up your birthday. And so basically you just say, hey, I'm giving up my birthday. If you want to donate anything to me or give me anything, just make a donation in my name to Charity Water. And then that goes forward in your name for the donation. And so, anyway, that's what inspired me to do Charity Water. And so Dan actually had the idea. He's like, well, why don't we just say any proceeds that we get here, we'll go to Charity Water. And I was like, oh, thank you. Thank you so much. So that's where, Charity Water, that's why I support them, is because it was just funny how it all happened. It was like, it was meant to be. I was already talking about, I want to get involved with, you know, I want to give locally and then give globally. And that's the global option there for me. And so that's what was inspired me. I got to hear him talk, and I got to ask him a few questions and meet him personally, and it was really inspiring. So,
yeah, and, cool. And so any of the money we make from affiliate sales from our resources page goes directly to Charity Water on simplelifetogether.com. And the other one that we do on Vanessa's business site is Get Simplified, and all of the affiliate sales money from that goes to Kiva, and we give to Kiva personally as a family. And really the reason we went with Kiva is, if you're not familiar with Kiva, they help budding entrepreneurs with microfinance loans. And in a lot of places, I've been blessed, and so has Vanessa, we've been blessed to really travel the world all over the place. So we've seen a lot of the benefactors of people who would be the recipient of a Kiva loan. And So what you do is it's a crowdsourced microfinance loan that's managed by Kiva and some of their subsidiaries that they loan money to people who ordinarily wouldn't be able to get a loan because of their credit history or just the exorbitant rates of interest that is charged in some countries. You know, they don't have fair lending acts and things like that in some of these countries. So we lend almost entirely to women and almost entirely in Africa, in the Middle East or Central Asia, where we both spend a significant amount of time. We do some here in our hemisphere as well. But when we first started that, we had at the time it was just our son, and when we looked through it, our daughter was too young to comprehend anything. But we looked through the profiles, and you pick who you want to lend to. And again, we choose mostly women, and mostly the ones that are looking to deal with food products or some type of daily sustenance. We don't subsidize the makeup ones or whatever. Not that they're not important too, but it's just we want to make sure the basic needs in life are met. And so we kind of read through the profiles, and I think there's a lot to be learned for kids and us to look through these profiles of people who in some ways financially they're not as fortunate as we are. In other ways, they're just as fortunate. They have people that they love in their family. They have kids or what have you. But we want to do our little part to help. And so we've been, I think we've sponsored almost, between our family and the proceeds that Vanessa's raised on her site, over 20 people on Kiva. And the goal for Charity Water is to someday be able to slap down a check for a well, which is $5,500, or a well for a village. So that's something that's on our scope, and we hope we attain those goals, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. That is inspirational stuff. I love the concept of this partner charity for your business. I was talking to Scott Dinsmore of liveyourlegend.net a few episodes ago about his partner charity, Impossible to Possible, and we were comparing that a little bit to my partner charity, Second Harvest Heartland, and it's just, I got the idea from Scott, and other people have told me that they are implementing the idea of a partner charity for their business based on me, which again, I take no credit for. I just mention it because it's important. And I love hearing other people's stories about their partner charity, what it means to them, what they're trying to do, how it aligns with their values, their core beliefs in life. So that's great to hear you talk about that. I guess the only other thing that I'd ask you here is, is there anything that we didn't talk about that you would like people to know?
Joel, we didn't talk about spreadsheets.
Or curating.
Oh, man.
I can't believe it.
We could. I was going to intentionally cut that off because not that we're running out of time. Yeah. The internet is an unlimited place, and people's attention, of course, isn't unlimited. Sure. We could talk spreadsheets here. You know what? Let's save that one for a follow-up.
Sounds good.
We'll talk about the spreadsheets that you use to keep track of all the stuff in your edit and forget it challenge. And some folks can follow my spreadsheet journey with my spreadsheet spotlights and all the other stuff.
Well, you have inspired me. So I just have to let you know, I was kind of a novice spreadsheet person, but now I'm starting to get a little bit more deliberate about it. So thank you.
Sure. Okay.
I wasn't sure what they were. I took the linen out of the closet and laid it around the bed. I called that spreadsheets. So I wasn't sure.
Can I use that one?
Sure you can.
Wow. That's good. I'll make sure I do copyright Dan Hayes 2013 every time I say it. Okay. Well, thank you for mentioning that, Vanessa, but throwing it back in your corner, is there anything that you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
No, I always say no, but then you really, yes, there is something. I just want to, first of all, thank you for having us on the show today. But as far as the listeners out there, that there really can be some happiness and joy, or at least more happiness and more joy in your life when you do simplify, and then don't beat yourself up and wrap yourself into this tight definition of what simple is or what, you know, minimal is or anything like that. It's just, it's a journey, like Dan and I say, that we're on, and that it's a continuous process of learning. But the bottom line is that less really can be more.
Yeah, and, you know, I'd like to say that take some time to find a community that that fits your ideals and goals and become a part of it and contribute to it. And if you don't find it, maybe start it yourself. And, you know, guys like you, Joel, and there's so many great bloggers out there and podcasters out there. that if your listeners take a moment and go make a comment on iTunes for them or comment on the blog, share it with somebody who may not know they need the information. You know, we do that a lot with friends. We forwarded your stuff lots of times to other folks and say, hey, check this out. And it's kind of a way of spreading what you believe in and maybe helping somebody out who's, their life is a little chaotic and they just maybe haven't faced it yet. So it's a way to help a buddy out.
Well, thank you. I try to reciprocate as much as I can, and I appreciate any small thing that you're doing for me and some of the ideas behind my business. That's really cool. Remind everybody real quick, though, if they want to know more, and based on our fascinating chat, I'm thinking that people are going to want to read and hear more from you. Where can we find you online?
SimpleLifeTogether.com. That's as easy as that.
All right.
And I'm at, if you want to learn a little bit more about the organizing side of the house, it's GetSimplifies.com.
And there's links to that from SimpleLifeTogether.com as well.
Right. I'll have all this in the show notes too, awesome. So that people don't have to hunt around for it.
Thank you.
Well, if you dig the whole professional organizing thing like Vanessa does, you can, of course, dive into my professional organizer's hand guide on Value Simple. It's at valuesimple.com/professional-organizers-guide. It will also be in the show notes. Perhaps you're a bit more likely to be interested in visiting the brand spanking new Refuge of Simplicity that I've created over at Value Simple. I just launched it this week. It is January 29th of 2013, for those of you who are listening in the future. And it's a free online sanctuary. And that's the image that I want to have people as they enter in a place of refuge where they can get resources that will help them simplify, organize, and be money-wise. The personal user guide is in there. There's some pretty wicked spreadsheet templates that aren't the typical ones floating around the internet. And there's going to be some groovy new resources that the boys in the back room of the Value and Simple Labs are working on right now. You can find that Refuge of Simplicity at valueofsimple.com/newsletter. So no need to dilly-dally. Check it out. Assuming you don't get distracted by leaving a review of this show or Dan and Vanessa's show on iTunes first. Dan, Vanessa, I just want to thank you again. It's been wonderful, and I'm grateful and appreciative of the time that you've given me, that you've given everybody here today. Thanks.
Thank you. It's been our pleasure.
All right, everyone. It's time for your partner in simplifying to sign off again. You've just listened to the Smart and Simple Matters podcast with Joel Zaslavsky, creator of All Things Value of Simple.